Welcome to the Georgia Today podcast from GPB News. Today is Friday, February 21st. I'm Peter Biello. This podcast has the latest reports from the GPB News team. Send feedback or story tips to georgiatoday@gpb.org. On today's episode, a lawsuit challenging Georgia's near ban on abortion is headed back to a trial court. Georgians express fear and outrage at congressional town hall meetings, and a new exhibit at the Tubman African American Museum in Macon shines a new light on the lives of enslaved people.
Reading their stories and reading that they were running away to families or they had lovers really just exemplified the importance of why we need to showcase this.
These stories and more are coming up on this edition of Georgia Today. The exact number of employees fired by the Atlanta-based Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is still unclear. But a week after thousands of Georgians have lost their federal jobs, some Georgia Democrats are imploring Governor Brian Kemp and state Republicans to voice their support and oppose the federal cuts. GPB's Sophie Gratis has more from the state capitol.
Among those laid off from the CDC in Atlanta is Sonia Arundar, who worked in communications and web design.
I couldn't believe it. It was just a shock.
She got the same termination letter as other federal employees without warning. Governor Kemp has reiterated in a statement to GPB that he supports the, quote, right-sizing of the government. Lining the Capitol steps on Friday, some state Democrats and their constituents, including Joy Carter, said they'll keep raising the alarm about potential fallout of the layoffs.
They may do this in Washington, but it has local effect. And I think the people that are in this building need to pay attention to that.
Carter's daughter, who worked in vaccine safety, was also laid off last week from the CDC. For GPB News, I'm Sophie Gratis.
A lawsuit challenging Georgia's near ban on abortion is headed back to a trial court. The Georgia Supreme Court voted 6-1 yesterday to require the trial court judge to re-examine whether the people who want to overturn the law have legal standing to sue. In the meantime, Fulton County Superior Court Judge Robert McBurney's ruling from September striking down the abortion law remains on hold. McBurney had ruled in September that Georgia unconstitutionally prohibits abortions beyond about 6 weeks of pregnancy, often before women realize they're pregnant. McBurney reasoned that privacy rights under Georgia's state constitution include the right to make personal health care decisions. Georgia's law, signed by Republican Governor Brian Kemp in 2019, was one of a wave of restrictive abortion measures that took effect in Republican-controlled states after the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade in 2022. A dozen U.S. states are now enforcing bans on abortion at all stages of pregnancy, and four states ban abortions around the sixth week of pregnancy. Voters in Missouri overturned a near-total ban on abortions in November, and abortions resumed there last week. Lawsuit reform, Governor Kemp's top priority this session, finally made its way to the Senate floor today. GPB's Sarah Callis reports.
SB 68 would cap the amount of damages awarded in pain and suffering cases, limit liability for injuries that occur on an owner's property, and limit damages in medical malpractice suits to actual medical costs. Republicans like Senate President pro tempore John Kennedy generally supported the bill.
It's going to deal with the issue of excessive lawsuits and stabilizing the cost of insurance.
Democrats like Senator Nabila Islam Parks mostly opposed it.
It's about creating a manufactured crisis to justify stripping away consumer protections and handling even more power to billion-dollar insurance corporations.
The bill passed 33-21, with one Democrat and one Republican crossing party lines. For GPB News, I'm Sarah Callis at the state capitol.
More than 500 constituents turned out in Roswell last night for a town hall hosted by Republican U.S. Representative Rich McCormick, and many expressed outrage over President Donald Trump's recent statements and actions. At times, McCormick struggled to contain the crowd's outbursts, many of which disparaged Trump's recent statements, likening himself to royalty. McCormick said he agreed with some of the constituents who said the presidency has grown too powerful.
I don't think executive privilege should be as strong as it is. I think we're out of bounds right now. I think your direct representation, whether you like me or not, I'm the closest thing you have to represent.
McCormick says a potential remedy is a bill designed to give Congress the power to approve new federal regulations. His town hall comes as the executive branch's decisions to fire thousands of people are challenged in court. At the same time Rich McCormick faced constituents, Democrat Sanford Bishop, representing the 8th Congressional District in southwest Georgia, took questions during a telephone town hall. One mother from Columbus asked Bishop if President Trump's actions against DEI policies could affect her son's senior year at a historically black university, or HBCU.
I'm concerned that the HBCU is DEI, isn't it? And will that be targeted more?
Yes. With these executive orders rolling back DEI policies, HBCUs may face some significant funding cuts.
Already, one U.S. Department of Agriculture scholarship program for HBCU students, the 1890 program, has been suspended. Georgia's Fort Valley State University is a participating school. Lawyers for the state of Georgia argued in court yesterday executions of certain people on death row should resume because the conditions of a COVID-19 pandemic-related agreement have been met. The 2021 agreement stated that some executions would not be scheduled until the expiration of the COVID-19 emergency, the resumption of normal visitation at state prisons, and the availability of the COVID vaccine to, quote, all members of the public. The vaccine is still not approved for infants under 6 months. The state argues vaccine antibodies can be transferred from a pregnant mother to a fetus, and therefore it is available to everyone. Fulton County Superior Court Judge Shakura Ingram said yesterday the two sides gave her a lot to think about and would issue a ruling. A bipartisan group of Georgia lawmakers is backing new efforts to protect the Okefenokee Swamp from mining. Two bills introduced yesterday would either ban future mining along the swamp's Trail Ridge or impose a 5-year moratorium while experts assess environmental risks. The move comes as Twin Pines Minerals seeks final approval to mine for titanium near the refuge. Supporters say the pause would help protect one of North America's largest blackwater swamps. Twin Pines argues the project is safe and should move forward. Disability advocates say they are unhappy with Attorney General Chris Carr's decision to join a multi-state lawsuit that threatens 504 plans. 504 plans help ensure students with disabilities have equal access to educational opportunities. That includes kids with dyslexia or ADHD. Carr says he wants to eliminate provisions protecting children who are transgender.
Make no mistake, our lawsuit is all about one thing: fighting the Biden-Harris administration's obsession with promoting a radical, progressive transgender ideology at every turn. They tried to dismantle Section 504 by labeling transgender dysphoria as a disability.
The 17 Republican attorneys general that filed the lawsuit now say they never intended to get rid of all protections under 504. They've asked the court for a continued stay of the lawsuit, effectively putting it on pause, with the expectation that President Donald Trump will roll back recent protections for transgender children. Through close to 35,000 documented sea voyages, more than 9 million people were taken from West Africa to bondage in the New World. That's according to the Transatlantic Slave Trade Database, a project of universities across North and South America. What can get lost in such massive numbers is the texture of the lives of the enslaved people themselves, their individual stories. Now, an exhibit called Freedom Seekers at Macon's Tubman African American Museum sheds some light on those stories through old newspaper ads. GPB's Grant Blankenship explains.
Tubman Museum curator Jeff Bruce and Mercer University professor of Africana Studies Matt Harper are still installing the exhibit a few days before it opens.
Are you worried about crowding? We've got 18 ads on this wall.
The ads lining the narrow gallery are from the Macon Telegraph, run between 1826 and the end of the Civil War. Each was paid for and placed in the paper by a slave owner seeking the return of an enslaved person who'd escaped, who ran away. It's the exhibit name, Freedom Seekers.
And we should put it in reading order, right?
Each ad is reprinted and framed. And above each of the ads is the name of the person who was sought, typically just a first name. Anne, Sandy, Moses. Matt Harper points out the lone exception, Tom Hammonds.
The owner will only call him Tom, but he says he goes by Tom Hammonds.
Under circumstances he could control, the man seeking Tom Hammonds,
he's not going to give him his last name.
But if you're really trying to find a person, it helps to tell other people exactly who you're looking for. And so when Tom Hammonds, a boat hand on the Okmulgee River, ran, he took control of his name, He forced the man he ran away from to acknowledge his name and share it with the larger world. In his campus office, Harper says it's the kind of detail he hoped his students would encounter when they began researching so-called runaway slave ads last year.
I mean, as much as the enslavers wanted to get a return on their investment, they had lost property and they're writing about people as property.
But they couldn't stop there.
They can't help if they actually want to get these people back, describe them as people, right? This is who they are. This is who their family members are. These are the things they like to do. This is what they're good at. This is how you'll know them. Their loves, their talents come through.
Isaac is described as a good carpenter, fleeing on a sorrel mare in his blue satinette round coat. Bill as a wagoner on the road between Augusta and Macon, who took with him a season's earnings. Jim is described as missing a finger, likely on the way to his mother. Judy and her daughter Unity escaped together. The mother's right arm said to be disfigured from being broken. The child described by the man seeking them both as, quote, almost white.
Are we too far off? As long as we go the same height, right? That's just to mark the height. So we
back in the gallery, Mercer University students Simone Walker and Taylor Boyd mount the panels for the most famous people to escape slavery in Macon, Ellen and William Craft. Sure. Boyd says the details in the ads imbue the people being sought with humanity.
They had everyday problems just like us. You know, sometimes it's easy just to simplify their story, but reading their stories and reading that they were running away to families or they had lovers really just exemplified the importance of why we need to showcase this.
Newspapers everywhere ran runaway slave ads, especially after the passage of the Federal Fugitive Slave Act of 1850. And as graphic design student Naluchi Okonkwo found, the ads had a consistent look.
It's essentially an icon.
Or a set of icons.
I found a lot of them were repeating. It's essentially the same exact graphic of the person walking with a stick.
That's for men. Ads for women showed a bindle tied to the stick on their shoulder. The Fugitive Slave Act made it illegal for anyone to offer sanctuary to someone escaping slavery. It also gave everyone the opportunity to make money as a bounty hunter. It started with appeal through the newspaper ads. Naluchi Okonkwo says the icons helped hunters cut through the other visual clutter.
So that way, these, slave catchers, if you will, for lack of a better term, know that, oh, you're looking for a man this time, or, oh, you're looking for a woman, or, oh, you're looking for a man and a woman, or, oh, you're looking for an older man, or, oh, you're looking for a more sprightly man, or any of those things.
And when you think about it, these icons wouldn't have been an effective visual shorthand if people weren't seeing them all the time, the way we see apples and swooshes and lowercase f's today.
That shows how prevalent slavery was.
Professor Matt Harper.
Students were really surprised by how frequent the ads were, that they were on every single issue, multiple ads per issue. Some were surprised about how long someone might be looking for someone for 2 years, 3 years, keep running the ads over and over again in the paper.
There were just so many, and often they were all on one page. And
that definitely struck student Tamaya Morrison. Even now, months after the class, she still thinks about the ads a lot.
Oh, definitely, because my family is from Macon. I think this class has really put a lot into perspective as far as my, not only my Macon heritage, but like my Southern Black heritage in general, because like, this is really how I got here, and it's like, it makes so many things make sense.
And among all the ads, there's one she finds particularly ironic.
I think the one that sticks out to me the most is the one about Moses, because his name is Moses, of course.
Even to slaveholding Christians, of which there were many, Moses was known for leading his people from slavery. And so Morrison asks,
how can you hold a slave named Moses? But I mean, he still manages to escape and gain his freedom on Christmas Day.
Yes, many of the ads depict suffering, she says.
But even through the suffering, you're able to see the resilience of the people, and I think that's something really special.
As they attempted, and often succeeded, in leaving suffering behind. The Freedom Seekers exhibit at Macon's Tubman African American Museum goes through March 22nd. For GPB News, I'm Grant Blankenship.
Atlanta's Piedmont Park Conservancy is inviting the public to weigh in on draft plans for major park renovations. A virtual meeting scheduled for tomorrow would provide an opportunity for community members to share thoughts on one of two paths forward. One plan introduces new opportunities to play and gather, while the other emphasizes natural exploration and scenic views. Proposed improvements for both plans include dedicated bike and scooter paths, enhanced entrances, and increased biodiversity. Tomorrow's feedback session, held virtually, begins at 1 o'clock. A music festival in Atlanta this weekend aims to raise support and awareness for the caregivers of those living with Alzheimer's. GPB's Ellen Eldridge explains.
The 11th annual Alzheimer's Music Fest, organized by advocates Vince Zangaro and Carissa Rumsey, will raise money for caregivers to buy the things they need. Things like wheelchairs and hospital beds that aren't always covered by insurance. Zangaro says proceeds from the show will support the Cherokee County nonprofit Stand Up for Seniors.
So working with Cherokee Senior Services and other senior services throughout the country is kind of the direction that Carissa and I are going through. Let's work straight with them. They have the infrastructure. Let's raise the money, create all these programs, just like we have in the past. Respite care, free medical equipment, education, support groups.
Zangaro says the music festival takes place at Smith's Old Bar in Atlanta, and they plan to expand it to Savannah, Athens, and other Georgia cities in the future. For GPB News, I'm Ellen Eldridge.
The city of Atlanta has released what it's calling an employee bill of rights. Mayor Andre Dickens says the guide is meant to balance transparency and accountability. Its release comes in the wake of the abrupt resignation earlier this week of the city's inspector general, who said upon her resignation that recent changes to her office hindered her ability to investigate corruption. The city says the office of inspector general will remain independent. The bill of rights includes, among other things, any employee's right to quash subpoenas issued by the city's inspector general. A new book honoring the legacy of Congressman John Lewis is celebrating civil rights through quilting. The Atlanta Quilt Festival, in partnership with South Fulton Arts, has released Good Trouble Quilts, The Fight, The Progress, The Legacy, a 200-page photo book featuring quilt art inspired by Lewis's life. The book, available now, will be the centerpiece of this year's Atlanta Quilt Festival in August, with a book signing on opening day. In sports, in the NBA, Hawks all-star guard Trae Young had some pointed comments about the officials following Atlanta's 114-108 loss to the Orlando Magic last night. Young, who was tagged with a technical foul early in the fourth quarter, said he felt the officiating was one-sided in the matchup of teams jockeying for playoff seating in the Eastern Conference. The Hawks were whistled for 25 fouls and the Magic 22, but Orlando had 38 free throw attempts to Atlanta's 28. Hawks were also called for three technical fouls, and the Magic won. And the Atlanta Braves kick off their spring training games tomorrow against the Minnesota Twins, and the season begins with new ways to watch the team. FanDuel Sports Network will be streaming games throughout Braves country with no local blackouts. Fans can get monthly, seasonal, or annual subscriptions. Games will also be available on Charter Spectrum, Comcast Xfinity, Cox, DirecTV, DirecTV Stream, Fubo, Mediacom, and Uverse TV. And that's it for this edition of Georgia Today. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm going to be taking some time off. I'm expected to become a dad next week, so I'll spend time with my new child. I will be back with you in April. You will be in good hands in the meantime. You can always check gpb.org/news for updates. I'm Peter Biello. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back next week.